Ladies and gentlemen, we will open the House Committee on Revenue today. Today is Tuesday, the 26th of April, 2005, and we're scheduled for a couple of work sessions and some public hearings, and then the work session for the possible introduction of additional legislation to continue the work of the House Revenue Committee, and then a brief informational meeting regarding the fact that House Bill 3460 has been received by the committee. Colleagues, we've got various members that are coming and going during this time. We do have a quorum. Representative Galizio is not with us. I anticipate him shortly. Colleagues, the first item of business that we have today is a work session on House Bill 2574. So I will open a work session on House Bill 2574. Colleagues, I do not know of any motions or actions which need to be taken on 2574. Have you received anything since we last met last week on 2574? Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler, no, I have not.
Okay. Hearing and seeing no discussion relative to 2574, I'm going to close the work session on 2574 and open a work session on House Bill 2332. Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler and committee members, with House Bill 2332, this is the bill that we've been hearing about capital gains, and it has the five different amendments. And I just wanted to let everyone know that what I did after speaking with Representative Berger today and stuff is I went through and just kind of gave you revenue impact statements again. The numbers haven't changed. I just added the static portfolio versus dynamic effect so that everyone could see and everyone could be clear exactly what's in your total revenue loss estimate. So basically that's all I just wanted everyone to know, is that I did include all of your portfolio and dynamic effects. And again, the portfolio effects is such that just capital gains have this, and it's the idea that as you lower the capital gains tax rate, then you're going to see additional realization of capital gains. People will be less averse to actually realizing a capital gain because the tax rate is not as high. So that's what you're seeing in the positive impacts then to the portfolio effect. And basically, I'm assuming also that you see more of a bigger portfolio effect in the beginning as far as on a percentage basis of the realization of capital gains, and then that dissipates over time. And then you have the dynamic feedback effects, and again, that's from the Oregon Tax Incident Model. That includes all of the, corporate tax, personal income tax, all those additional tax revenues that we would be seeing from a tax cut. And so that's how you're getting those positive revenue impacts. And again, that is phased in over 5 years, so that also is growing until after 5 years, and you see the full effects of that coming into play in the economy. And then Representative Berger also asked me about just separating out. I had before a bigger table of the three different proposals, and then separating out OTM results just for the capital gains tax cut proposal. So that's what I also did, just to clarify for everyone exactly what this particular policy change will have in the economy as far as the effects. So that you just have that. It's the same information. It's just put on a little bigger table and a little easier to read and comprehend. So, Chairman Butler, do you want me just to go through the dash 4 or dash 5, or do you want me to go through all of them again, or what do you feel like?
We've had an opportunity to take a look at this. We've discussed the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. The chair is proposing that we adopt the dash 4 amendments. We are in work session. My motion is that we adopt the dash 4 amendments. To that motion. Any objections? We're going to go ahead and have a voice roll call on the. Was there a motion or an objection?
Clarification. Good. Elizabeth, could you highlight the dash fours?
Okay. So, Chairman Butler, Representative Hass, the dash four then is creating a phase in of the capital gains tax subtraction. So, again, dash four is a tax subtraction, not a tax rate reduction. So the subtraction is phased in for the personal income and corporate taxpayers according to the schedule. So it begins in 2007 as far as the tax year, and then it's 6% of the capital gains of all of your net capital gains, you would have a 6% subtraction in 2007, and then 2008 you'd have a 17%, and then in 2009 a 28%, and then in 2010 you'd have a 39% tax subtraction, and then in 2011 you would have a 50% net capital gains tax subtraction. So basically you would only be including in your base of income only half of the capital gains income by 2011. So that's basically what we're saying with the subtraction. You're minusing off the total income for capital gains. And then with corporate, it's phased in such that it doesn't begin in 2007, but it begins at tax year 2008 at 2% rate, 2009 at 17%, and at 2010, 50%, and then in 2011, 50%. So, again, that's a phase-in where it's fully implemented then in 2011, and as you can see from the revenue impact, I don't even have the full revenue impact is really going to be transpiring in 2011-12 would be the first year you would see the 50% from the personal income tax, capital gains tax subtraction being at 50%. So as far as the revenue impact, it's a revenue loss with the portfolio and dynamic feedback effects of $48.6 million in 2007-09 biennium, nothing in the current 2005-07 biennium, and then by the 2009-11 biennium, $218.2 million, and then that would grow by the 2011-13 biennium due to we being fully implemented at the 50% at that point.
Question?
Representative Hess?
This adds corporate excise tax?
Yeah.
The other versions didn't have corporate capital. It was just a personal capital gains. So.
Representative Hatt, the original bill, House Bill 2332, when it had the tax rate reduction, the rate reduction was occurring for both personal and corporate, and they both the rates went down to 4.5%.
Okay.
So yes, that version as well as House Bill the 2597 also had a corporate component to it also.
Okay. So, but this keeps that the same. Can I ask the maker of the motion why the subtraction method is preferable than just a straight rate cut?
You bet. Absolutely. I think that's an excellent question and one that I would be prepared to respond to. The subtraction rather than a rate cut, presently on the federal requires an additional series of computations on the capital gains schedule itself. On a page 2 and a 4562, I think, in the federal income tax returns, you've got multiple schedules they have to go to in order to prepare the additional computations for the actual calculation at different rates. We examined this with the Department of Revenue, and it was discovered that to come up with those kinds of calculation rate schedules, that it would be a fairly significant fiscal in doing that, where you get the same result as opposed to changing a rate using an exclusion. Now, this follows after Internal Revenue Code Section 1202, which used to allow anywhere from a 40% to a 60% exclusion, depending upon the year and the type of asset and so forth, that was originally subject to capital gains and was used as an exclusion and then taxed at the regular tax rate. So we're following after the old Internal Revenue Code Section 1202 to exclude income at the same tax rate to give us the net tax rate. By excluding, for instance, 6% of the capital gains, the effective rate becomes 8.5%. And by excluding 39% of the capital gains, the effective rate becomes 5.5%, and we're headed to a 50% exclusion, which gives you an effective rate of 4.5%, which if you were to follow after House Bill 2574, I think those are the amounts that were represented there.
And the fiscal was from the Revenue Department, or are you saying it has a lesser revenue impact?
It was a legislative fiscal impact as opposed to a revenue impact. The revenue impact should be identical, whether it be in an exclusion format or whether it's an additional rate calculation. The difference was that to develop the additional forms for the rate calculation and then follow it through, in addition to having to capture numbers off of various federal forms on a tax return by the Department of Revenue, that made make that much more difficult to calculate, that much more costly to implement. That Representative Galizio is recognized.
It could, this could be answered maybe by Representative Butler or maybe Elizabeth. Adoption of the Dash 4 amendment, what impact, if any, would that have on the Dash 1 amendment, the Dash 2, or any of the others? I mean, would that have any material impact on those amendments if those were adopted as well? Is that clear?
Representative Galizio, yes, you could take them together if you would like to. Yes, the Dash 1 and Dash 2 would just exempt the first 2,000, and then you would have this new tax rate that come into effect. Those Dash 1 and Dash 2 take effect earlier, too. So you would see then it's just your revenue impact in 2005, I think it was when yours were beginning, and then 06, and so you had a revenue impact then in 2006-07. Oh, I guess it actually began in 2006, your Dash 1 and Dash 2. But anyway, you get the idea. Yes, you could take them together, and there wouldn't be any problem that way.
And can I, one more question?
You bet. Yes, Representative Lee.
I feel like the kid in class who should have listened the first time, but I apologize. The distinction between the Dash 4 and the Dash 5, what really?
Chairman Butler and Representative Galizio, yeah, your Dash 5 is exactly the same as your Dash 4, only the implementation year.
That's
the beginning. And the Dash 5 begins in tax year 2005 and 2006 and 2007. So you're fully implemented at 50%, say, like for personal income tax payers, at 2009 versus 2011, which you're fully implemented at 50% under your Dash 4 amendment.
Representative Hess, you had brought forward the Dash 5. What's the reasoning behind the speeding up of the years?
The reasoning is to try and, if this is a good idea, to pay for it now instead of binding future legislators and future legislatures. I think it's just, if it's a good idea, we should do it now. And if we can't afford it now, then we should wait until the next session and pay for it then. It's just a straightforward way to try to move it up. Frankly, I think if we're going to do it, we should put it all. We should do it all this biennium if it makes sense. We can't afford this $300 million revenue hit this session. We all know that, and so I think it's irresponsible for us to put that debt on a future legislature. So that was the thinking behind that.
I appreciate that.
Elizabeth, could I?
Let me just respond to that, if I may. The concern that I had was that. Knowing that we could not afford to put to fully implement a capital gains reduction in the year or in the current biennium, the 03-05 or 05-07, I've delayed this starting in 07, and I've done that purposefully in looking at the estimated revenue increases that we've already projected. They are significant. They are substantial at this particular point. And because we have in the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars in anticipated increases in revenues and even into the billions of dollars of increases in revenue, the maker of the motion for the Dash 4 amendment, I perceive that this would be a way to try and entice capital to stay in the state of Oregon and to bring new capital investments back into the state of Oregon. Representative Galizio?
No, I'm just...
Okay.
Just looking at that.
Representative Hess.
Yes. I guess I haven't seen those same rosy predictions for especially billions coming into the state. But I know you have sponsored a capital gains tax cut like this before with an offsetting increase in income tax. And while I'm not advocating for that, I know that you at least at the time thought that that was a more responsible way to do it because you would be paying for it through another way, and therefore it would be a revenue neutral change. And now you've supported, but without the increase to offset it.
I think that probably isn't really germane to the motion for the amendment, but I think that it's still something we need to talk about, Representative, and I for one would certainly like to have that conversation. My greatest concern is anytime we talk about restructuring of the tax code to make it revenue neutral, it always seems to come back to visit us that it's some sort of restructuring of the tax code to raise, you know, $800 million or $1.2 billion. And I'm concerned about that because the projections, as I say, already show in the hundreds of millions and upwards of in excess of $1 billion and nearly two in the future increases, anticipated estimated increases in these revenue sources. And this should act as an incentive and a catalyst to, number one, keep capital gains revenues here in the state, and number two, attract new capital markets to the state of Oregon. And in working last session with Senator Deckert, these were the same kinds of things that we tried to do to entice venture capitalists to the state of Oregon, reducing either periodically, as is done in Dash 4 Amendment, or entirely cutting the capital gain out for new investment in the state of Oregon to try and entice new investment from outside capital sources outside the state of Oregon.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may, if you have those projections that show that the state will be bringing in billions more than anticipated, I think we should take a look at those projections. But I do have a question on this amendment to Elizabeth. Is this information, Elizabeth, the same as you had before? Taxpayers with gross income above $500,000 will receive 48% of the benefits, and taxpayers with incomes above $100,000 will receive 83% of the benefits?
Yeah, Representative Haas, that's just information from the most recent statistics that we have, which is 2003, and that's distributional breakdown, and that's just looking at the top portion and who's receiving the most of the tax. So that's where that comes from, and it applies to any of your capital gains bills.
Thank you.
Okay. You've heard the motion. The motion is that we adopt the Dash 4 amendments. I'll call for the question, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Galizio.
No.
Representative Comp.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
No.
Vice Chair Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Haas?
No.
And Chair Butler?
Butler votes aye. Motion to adopt Dash 4 passes. Further discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I would like to see House Bill 2332, as amended, move to the floor for further discussion, but retain my right to vote against it in the floor when it gets there.
Thank you very much. Representative Berger has made the motion that House Bill 2332, as amended with the Dash 4 amendment, move to the House floor with due pass. To your motion, Representative.
Mr. Chair, this is a discussion that needs to go on in a much broader context than just this committee. I think that we have seen from the discussion this morning that there's quite a bit to this. I originally was very supportive of a capital gains change that included a revenue neutral component. We are struggling with a lot of issues during this session. I think that the place to have further discussion on this is at the House floor, and therefore would move this bill out to the House floor as amended.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Galizio.
I would like to move Dash 1 amendment.
Okay. Let's see. There's an amendment to
the Can't move. Do that yet.
Pardon me?
Can't do that at this time.
No, you've got an amendment or a motion on the floor right now. So that would be out of order. Further discussion? We'll go ahead and call the roll. The motion is to move House Bill 2332 with the dash 4 amendments to the full House.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do we have discussion on this motion?
Yes, we can go ahead and discuss it. We do have members that need to testify in other committee hearings, but that's fine. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, this is a $300 million issue. I think we can take time for it.
You bet.
Discussion. I read with dismay today about how, among other districts, the Portland School District is laying off teachers, closing schools, and the story is similar to in many other districts. Some 90 school districts over the last 2 years have shortened their school year, and I just don't see how in the world we can say that, okay, we're going to say yes to a $300 million tax cut. I think most Oregonians would say, what are you people, crazy down there? You want to cut taxes while we're closing schools? And then you want to cut taxes for 83% of, you want to cut taxes for people making over $100,000 where 83% of the benefit will go. I mean, I just don't understand why we would do that or why we would bind the legislators who will come after this and have to balance their budget based on what we did before they got here. And I just don't understand it.
Thank you, Representative. I'm sorry that some of the schools failed to react in time in the Portland area, and that's what it appears, is that there's a number of schools that just have not have failed to react to the signs in the economy, as well as the downsizing of the number of students that they've had. And unfortunately, in rural Oregon, we've been experiencing that for a long time, closing schools and cutting back classrooms. Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gleeson.
Yeah, two questions, or one comment and then one question. The $12.393 billion size of the pie agreement that leadership came to. I guess, and I know we're, Representative Berger, you mentioned we want to have a debate on the House floor, as we will, as long as what's considered germane is broad enough that we can have a debate on the floor. I'm wondering where this fits in, this $300 million item. Where does this fit into the $12.393 billion agreement of the size of the pie? Was that considered in that discussion amongst leadership?
Representative Galizio, you'll notice that the Dash 4 amendments do not even begin until 2007, and they begin at a very small amount then at that particular point. If the 2007 legislature and meeting in January of 2007 decides that the economic pie isn't large enough to assimilate an increase of more than one half of 1% of the 9%, then at that particular point, that legislature can come back in and say, that looks like it's too much. Or if the revenue projections, which we are currently looking at right now, for the 07-09 biennium, or those future biennia, do not or fail to materialize, then that legislature has the ability to cut that back.
Okay.
So this is not taken into consideration. No money involved in this. No fiscal involved in this by any.
Okay, and then my question was more a procedural question. Am I going to have an opportunity to introduce the Dash 1, the Dash 2, and the Dash 3 amendments? Or is that being squelched?
You'd have to. Let's go into. Let's just stand at ease for a moment. Okay. Okay, we'll come back on the public record. The motion before us is to move House Bill 2332 to the full floor. Representative Raddick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that you said in your answer to Representative Galizio bothered me a little bit. You said that if we pass this now, then the next legislature can remove it or reduce it if they feel it is necessary. But at that point, a 50% vote won't do it. It would take a supermajority to do that.
I don't think that's correct, because it wouldn't have taken effect at that particular point.
No, that's not right.
That is not right?
No. Whenever you're going to raise taxes, which this would be doing if this becomes law, and then you try to repeal it, it's going to take a three-fifths vote. Yes.
Okay. Even if the tax has not been being used?
No.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
Okay. I stand corrected. That's correct.
And so that's why I think that it's, you know, it really goes against the grain for us to imagine that there's going to be such a revenue a boon in the next session that we can pass this debt, and I see it as a debt, onto the next session and make them deal with it in that manner. I think that's not very, very wise move on our part.
Okay. Further discussion? With that, we'll ask Clerk call the roll. And the motion is to move House Bill 2332 with a -4 amendments. The House floor, do pass recommendation.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Galizio.
No.
Representative Comp.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
No.
Vice Chair Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair House.
House votes no and serves notice of a possible minority report.
And Chair Butler.
Chair Butler votes yes. We will move House Bill 2332 to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Noted for the record that there's a possible minority report as well. With that, we will close.
Who's the carrier?
I'll carry it. Okay. House Bill will close the public or the work session on 2332. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2046. Again, colleagues, this is something we've heard with some detail last week. Elizabeth.
I'm Chairman Butler and committee members. With House Bill 2046, you have a -1 amendment, and that fills in the blanks, and that phases in an increase in the percentage for the federal earned income tax credit for Oregon's earned income tax credit. It changes Oregon's earned income tax credit to a refundable tax credit. It specifies that the refundable tax credit equals 5% of the federal earned income tax credit in tax year 2005. Then it goes up to 7.5% of the federal earned income tax credit in 2008. Then it becomes 10% in 2009 and beyond. And so, again, for the revenue impact, you have static, and then you have feedback effects. Again, I ran this in Oregon Tax Incident Model, and then you have the total static and dynamic feedback effects. And so beginning in 2007-08, it's at $6 million as far as a revenue loss. 2008-09, it goes to 12, 2009-11, 18, and then by 2010-11, it's roughly about $18 million a year.
Okay. Is there discussion on House Bill 2046? You've got the -1 amendments. Representative Hass?
I would move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2046.
Representative Hass moves the -1 amendments dated 4-18-05 to House Bill 2046. To your motion, Representative Hass.
Let me find them here. What we we did here was built upon the original legislation that was originated out of the interim House Revenue Committee to make the earned income tax credit refundable in Oregon. It's now 5% and non-refundable. And what that has done is contributed to a less regressive flip in those charts at the very beginning. And so what we have done is made it refundable in the first year, 2007, and left the rate at 5%, and the next year raised the rate to 7.5%, and the following year to 10% with this amendment.
Further discussion? Representative Kamp.
I want to speak just briefly, Chairman Butler, some of the information that we've been given, and I know that House District 22 has a number of people that live in poverty, in high need. As a school principal, there are many of my students that do not get to have their teeth checked and even any dental care for years at a time because their parents can't afford it. And, 20% of the people in my district are eligible to claim this, and I absolutely support it and hope that the rest of my fellow representatives can also support this.
Further discussion? Thank you, Representative Kahn.
Thank you.
And this does make this much more progressive at the low end. Further discussion? The motion is to append the -1 amendments to House Bill 2046, dated 4-1805. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Hass.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2046 as amended to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Hass moves House Bill 2046 as amended with the -1 amendments to the full House with the due pass recommendation. Your motion, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there are really two reasons you cut taxes. One for equity, the other reason for stimulus. Clearly, this is an effort to towards the first, equity, because those people in poverty, even though they're in poverty, they pay a smaller proportion of what they have in taxes, and this is an equitable way to try to begin to even that out. But I can't help but noticing on the economic stimulus part of this equation, the dynamic feedback shows it has a greater economic stimulus effect than the capital gains tax cut does, pound for pound on a percentage basis. And I think that speaks a little bit to the overall effect of the capital gains tax cut. So I do support this, but I have to admit I do have some reluctance. Part of it is because under the terms of getting this bill through, we were not allowed to start it until 07 and 08, and I reiterate what I said earlier, that if something is a good idea, we should pay for it now. If it's not, we should wait and let the next legislative session decide whether they can afford it next time. So I do have that, a reluctance, and I also have a reluctance in hitting these tax credits without going into our thick book of tax expenditure tax credits and pulling $17 million worth of old or underutilized tax credits that don't work. We have that budget environment now where we can't afford to keep throwing tax breaks on top of one another, good or bad, without pulling something out to make it a net revenue neutrality. So I do have some reluctance with this, and perhaps our colleagues in the other chamber can equal out some of that. So,
which I'm sure they will do if they want to do so, Representative. Thank you. Further discussion on the motion to move 2046 to the House with a due pass? We will go ahead then and take a vote on the motion to move 2046 as amended to the House with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections to that? Hearing and seeing none, and recognizing that Representative Esquivel has been called out to another committee, he's being excused. We will just go ahead and do that on voice vote that we did. Representatives Galizio and Olson, you both were on the work group to do this. Would you jointly carry that to the House, please?
We can do that.
Fine. With that, we will close the work session on 346. Colleagues, at this hour, our colleague Dennis Richardson is on national TV downstairs in the media room, debating some issues with some national commentators on the East Coast at 4:45 in the afternoon. So we just remember him at this particular time while he's duking it out downstairs. Okay, we are set for a public hearing on 344. Oh, and I'll open that public hearing on House Bill 3440 as it's been A engrossed.
Chairman Butler and committee members, you have House Bill 3440 A engrossed, and it comes to you from the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs. So they have filled in the blanks that were originally in the bill. And what this is doing is it exempts the unemployment compensation benefits from federal taxable income for low-income taxpayers. It specifies that the taxpayer is allowed a subtraction of unemployment compensation benefits if a single tax return has federally adjusted gross income of less than $20,000 and if a joint tax return has federally adjusted gross income of less than $30,000. So basically, it's targeting low-income folks, joint returns $30,000 and less, and then all other returns having $20,000 or less. And just so everyone's clear, usually in the personal income tax, we usually have a half of the amount that we would have as a bracket for single returns. It's usually half of a joint return. So this is gives a little bit bigger bracket to the singles and the head of households and those filing separately, married separately, then you would get if you just had doubling of that. So, you know, just so everyone's clear, we don't have brackets that are exactly like what we would have in our personal income tax system where we the brackets are twice as big for joint returns and as they are for single. So basically when I ran this with the personal income tax calculator, this basically is looking at having just a portion of it come through in 2005-06 because it would be beginning in 2006. So it would just be those first 6 months of 2006. And so it's a loss of $17 million in the 2005-07 biennium and then by the 2007-09 biennium, $24 million, and 2009-11 biennium, $23 million. And so it is going down slightly due to our projections of those number of returns that would actually be having unemployment compensation benefits.
Thank you, Elizabeth. The maker of the bill is Representative Schaffler, and he is on his way, is my understanding, to testify.
Yeah, and also just so everyone has their own understanding of who actually is receiving unemployment compensation income. So I gave you the table from the Department of Revenue on that, and that just shows you a breakdown there for those returns in 2003. And again, it categorizes both joint and single together by their adjusted gross income. And so that then shows you the number of returns that are in different income groups. But you can see the majority of it is in the lower income groups. You have very few out there above, you know, even 100,000, between 100,000 and above. You can see you've really only got about less than 6,000 returns out of 170,179 returns total in 2003 that had unemployment compensation income.
Representative Schaffer, please come forward. You bet.
Is anybody attacking me?
Welcome, Representative Schaffer. We're honored to have you here today. I know that you've got a busy schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is an honor, believe me. And I understand I came on an interesting afternoon. So I'm State Representative Mike Schaffer, House District 48, Happy Valley, Southeast Portland. And I'm the sponsor of House Bill 3440, which would give would exempt from state taxation unemployment insurance benefits of folks, individuals that make $20,000 or less, or a couple that make $30,000 or less. It's the, I think Elizabeth would be able to tell closer to exact how much hit this would be on our revenue. You know, I voted to help a lot of rich people in the revenue system this year, and this one's going to help poor working Oregonians. And they ain't going to take their money and squirrel it away in Grenada or Grand Caymans. They're going to go out and spend it immediately in the Oregon economy. So that's pretty much all I have to say. I'd be happy to try. I believe I've provided you with some information. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to do my best to try and answer.
Questions for Representative Shoffer? Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm just curious why you didn't give the full double credit for married couple filing jointly. Why? And normally, there would have been, if it's 20 single, it would have been 40 for married.
It was just at random. It was just an arbitrary number, and it also reduced the amount of revenue we'd lose. I mean, I would like to have gotten rid of all taxation on unemployment insurance, period. But that would have been like $95 million. And it was just an arbitrary choice. Could have drawn a line anywhere.
Thank you.
Can I just speak to one point, and just so everyone's clear, too? I think when I ran Representative Shoffler's first estimates and stuff, I was always halving the joint income limit. So just so everyone's clear, these numbers won't add up exactly right just because of the way the bill is written, with having $20,000 for other returns besides joint returns having a $30,000 limit. So that's why I was just saying that. So this table here is not going to exactly match up. He's got a table in the very last page of his handouts that won't match up exactly with this.
Bob, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Shiprack, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council. I had asked Representative Shoffler to consider putting this bill in, and I'll be very brief and explain why. You probably already know. In my industry, the last few years have been extraordinarily tough for construction workers, despite a series of extensions both by the legislature and by Congress. A high number of my members have exhausted all their unemployment benefits, have been forced to leave the state in search of employment now. And I guess the crowning bad thing that happens is in April they get a bill for state income taxes on top of the fact that they have no job. And it's just not fair. I cannot justify the public policy behind taxing people without jobs that have been living on unemployment for as much as a year. And that's what we had in that case. It really came home to me. This time, might have even been this week, a year ago, I was fishing with my little brother, and his employer had closed the doors. He's a locksmith, and they had closed the doors, and fairly low income, and he was telling me that he owed the state $700 and he had no money to pay it, and because of state income taxes. And so that's the long and the short of it. I think it's an issue that is very deserving of the legislature's look. Not all states tax unemployment as Oregon does. In fact, up until, and I can't give you the exact year, I sure remember it well, though, in the mid-80s approximately, unemployment wasn't taxed at either the federal or state level, and it was instituted by Congress in the mid-80s. And, of course, we followed the federal tax code and adopted it. And I don't think we've ever asked ourselves why. So that question is in front of you now, and I hope that you see fit to pass the legislation. I, too, would wish it was broader, but it will help a lot of people who really need it. And I just in closing, I think this is a great bipartisan bill, and it's something that every legislator should be proud to take home. I think this is really something the public would like to see, given the current climate where it appears those who may not need it the most are getting tax benefits, and these people who clearly do need some help, and as representatives said, this money goes right immediately into the economy to keep commerce flowing in this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shiprack. Questions of Mr. Shiprack? There are, by my count, I think 12 states that do not have, which do have income tax, which do not tax the unemployment benefit in any way, shape, or form. That includes California.
Right.
And then, of course, there are other states, at least five other states, which do not have an income tax, so to speak. So there's looks like there's probably, as I say, a dozen states that have taken the affirmative approach not to tax the unemployment benefits. Do we know whether or not there's a fiscal and implementation of this?
Chairman Butler, I haven't asked Deborah if she's ran one or anything for this.
Mr. Chair, I was given the standard $50,000. Yeah. Just have to reprint forms and all that.
I see.
Yeah, I think we do have a minimal fiscal from the other bill.
Okay. Okay. Further questions?
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee.
This is for Representative Schaffler. It's more just, I mean, you had mentioned before the timing. Today has been, we've had some significant legislation here. So, and so this is partly as a result of that, but, you know, we just passed legislation that's going to help those at the upper end, and then with the income tax credit, those at the lower end, and I understand what you're trying to do. I guess my question is, what are we going to do, or what have we done for those in the middle, who it seems to me are going to shoulder the burden of everything that we're doing here, because we're not offsetting this with eliminating some loopholes. So what do you say to the bulk of Oregonians who perhaps are in the middle, and it seems like the burden on them is significantly increasing?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to start off with that. You know, when we did the unemployment insurance extension 2 years ago, had folks from Intel come in and tell them, please extend this, $100,000 a year. Please extend this, I'm trying to keep my house. I don't think we're going to probably do much of anything immediately, but I know this much. We add some flexibility in our land use. We start taking advantage of the natural resources in a sustainable way in the state, which we aren't doing. Start generating some more power. Give people an opportunity to invest in this state. You know, we talk about how small business is the backbone of the state, and it isn't. And that's good. We have one Fortune 500, and it's homegrown, and there's a reason why. Because people don't, well, I 2 years ago I would not have said this. People don't want to come to this state and invest big, huge amounts of money because they think it's not a good climate for business. And I've taken some very unpopular votes, and I might take another one after what came out here today. But I have agonized over how we get to help those people in the middle, create more jobs, those kind of jobs. The people that have these jobs, some of them are construction workers that work 6 months. Some of them are just, they get minimum wage. You know what? And that's not the kind of job I want to create. But we have to make, we're not going to tax people. Now, you got me going, Representative, and I'm not.
Can I withdraw my question?
We're not going to raise anybody's taxes in this state. I don't care. We could have a 60 to nothing, 30 to nothing. The governor signs it, goes out there, and it's going to be voted down. So I've agonized over how to do this, how to break this logjam, and it is getting people to invest in this state, getting the rich people to come invest in this state. Because you know what? If we don't get people building, manufacturing, growing, generating, nothing happens. And the money that comes to pay for the good people that here are today advocating for education, health care, and safety, that money, it does literally flow in the streams, grow in the forest, and it can be manufactured in our industries. But we have to make this place an attractive place to invest. And that includes a strong education system, a strong health care for everybody, I hope someday, and safe streets. So, and it ain't going to happen overnight, and it's going to take a long time for it to happen, and there aren't going to be any immediate answers. As a matter of fact, most of the answers we're facing now aren't even pleasant.
Thank you very much, Representative. Appreciate that. Representative Combe.
Chairman Butler, this, you could probably answer this, and it's just making sure it's straight in my head. Okay, so I'm working at a job, and I get paid my regular gross salary. And then you take FICA out of that, right? Your unemployment.
Right. You're half. No, you don't pay any unemployment. The unemployment is paid by your employer.
Okay, the employer pays it.
Yes.
Okay, that takes, because I thought, did the individual already pay taxes on it once? But no, they didn't.
No, it's paid by the employer, and it's matched in part with the on a federal system, the SUI and the FUI.
Okay.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Hass.
Thank you. Representative Fappler, I've been saying this to everybody who comes before us who happens to criticize Oregon's business climate, so don't think I'm singling you out, but the Tax Foundation, the National Tax Foundation, has said Oregon has the 10th best business climate of all 50 states. So I sometimes wonder whether part of our problem is that we have too many people in Oregon criticizing Oregon's business climate. And as to this bill, I do think this is really a federal reconnect issue, which we danced with earlier this year. It's now in the Senate. I suspect we'll get it back, and maybe this is something that could be amended into that reconnect bill to decouple from this tax that was instituted back in the 80s and we connected to. Hope we can.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm open for any ideas that I think will help people, working people here in Oregon.
Yeah, no, they do.
Representative, I believe federal does tax the unemployment, doesn't it?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And we decouple from that.
You should say you make it a federal issue.
Okay, because I think we're doing it like the federal is doing it right now. We're taxing the same as the federal does. So this the Reconnect bill keeps us with the same AGI, the same taxable. This would be in effect an additional adjustment if this bill were passed.
Mr. Chair, I was just saying that when that bill comes over, there's nothing to stop us from disconnecting to that provision.
I see what you're saying. I beg your pardon.
I don't want to have to separate you two. So.
Thank you very much, Representative Schaffer.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. There's no one else signed up on House Bill 3440. We'll close the public hearing on 3440 and open a public hearing on 3455.
I'm Chairman Butler with House Bill 3455. This is a pollution control and business energy tax credit change. And so for those of you who were on the committee last session, or those of you who were in the House last session, we heard this bill in the form of House Bill 2652. So this is the same bill from that last session in 2003. It got through the House, but it was not heard in the Senate and did not become law. So basically this is those same changes. It's specifying the different provisions being that a non-point source pollution control facility can be a land management system approved by USDA or the NRCS. It's deleting the filing deadline for the credit of December 31st, 2008, so that's a current sunset in the law, and it's replacing that sunset date with January 1st, 2014. It's increasing the lower tier credit percentage from 15% to 35% of the certified cost of the pollution control facility, and it increases the top tier credit percentage from 35% to 50% of the certified cost of the pollution control facilities for those facilities that are certified on or after January 1st, 2006. It's specifying that DEQ must provide the reasons and actions necessary to be taken by applicants in order to meet the environmental management requirements to qualify for the pollution control tax credit. It expands the business energy, then facilities and alternative energy, the residential devices tax credits. It adds renewable energy equipment manufacturing facilities to the qualified facilities under the business energy tax credit program. It allows 50% of the certified cost of the renewable energy manufacturing facilities to be claimed as a business energy tax credit. It takes 10% each year over 5 years in order to get at that credit. It retains the current law restriction on claiming dual federal and state tax credits and grants. It eliminates claiming both an Oregon business energy tax credit and that truck engine tax credit that was enacted last session, beginning after January 1st, 2004. It eliminates claiming both a pollution control tax credit and a business energy tax credit. It allows a solar electric system to qualify for the business energy tax credit. That tax credit for the solar electric system equals $3 per watt of installed output for up to 2,000 watts of installed output. It caps the annual amount of the cap to the lesser of the tax liability of the taxpayer, or $1,500. Allows a 3-year carry forward on that tax credit and caps then the total amount of the tax credit, $6,000 per system. It applies to tax years on or after January 1st, 2006. Now, I haven't gone through and gotten new data yet from from the Department of Energy or DEQ, so I will work on that. But I just gave you, since this is the exact same bill from last session, I just gave you the revenue impact from the bill last session, and then you can at least get an understanding of approximately how much the revenue impact would be. So again, you've got pollution control expansion, a business energy tax credit expansion, and these alternative energy devices residential tax credit. So the sum total in the 2005-07 biennium, which again is only about half a year because you're beginning in 06, so you're only getting 06-07 fiscal year. So it's $1.696 million is a revenue loss for that first biennium, and then by the 2007-09 biennium, it'd be $12.7 million loss.
Okay. John Ledger, would you come forward? You've got some information to share relative to this bill in relationship to some other bills that are moving in the process. Who wants to go first, John or Mark?
I'll go first, if I may, Mr. Please. Chairman, members of the committee. John Ledger, Vice President of Associated Oregon Industries. Just very briefly, because as you alluded to, there's other bills going on. The Pollution Control Tax Credit Program was one of those listed under Oregon's Economic Community Development flyers as one of the ways to get people to locate to Oregon, come to Oregon to put facilities here. It has a list of things that will attract businesses, not very long. They have lots of room for quotes. Okay. The Pollution Control Tax Credit has been around for quite some years, and it has been involved. It's been involved in the biofuels issues, the biofuels programs, and we currently have a bill that's being worked in the Environment Committee that is part of the biofuels package. And it's, I think it's a Representative Dingfelder and Krupp measure. It has quite a few people signed on. And it would take biofuels facilities and move them into the pollution control tax credit program to facilitate the construction and operation of those. The program was scheduled to sunset, so as it has routinely since 1968. It's been re-upped many times. And so we think that that bill has actually been worked quite a bit and will be worked some more. And after it comes out of environment, I believe it has a referral to this committee. And I think that would, my advice would be, that would be a much better bill, frankly, to work off of, because I think it deals with the biofuels. It'll be worked more. This bill has some problems with it, I think. I know I've talked with DEQ about administrative problems. And so I just mentioned to the chair and committee that you may wish to kind of postpone any prolonged discussion of this until I think a better bill comes along.
Thank you very much. Mark?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Nelson, representing the Oregon Metals Industry Council. I want to concur with Mr. Ledger, and that particular bill will be amended to reflect what you see today in House Bill 3455. So we'd like to bring it all together to you as a package from the Environment Committee and present it to you at that time.
Excellent. Thank you. Questions for these testifiers? Thank you very much. We also have Mike Graney from the Department of Energy signed up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy, and I wanted to speak just very briefly to the energy provisions in the bill. It's sections 16 to 20 on the business energy tax credit and sections 23 to 25 on the residential energy tax credit. These are provisions that we support, but again, given the fact that there's other legislative vehicles, I'll be very brief. Just wanted to mention that the provisions on the business energy tax credit on renewable energy manufacturing facilities, we made some changes to try to accomplish the same thing by rule through our research and demonstration authority, and I have some correspondence between the department and the governor about that rule change for you. Nevertheless, a statutory change that would clarify the eligibility of those manufacturing facilities for renewable resource components, I think, would be very helpful. Also, the provisions on solar energy are identical to those included in Senate Bill 733, which is one of the energy bills that the governor has endorsed in a recent letter that he sent to the House and Senate leadership, along with the biofuels energy package, which the governor has also endorsed. And I have a copy of that letter for you as well. Finally, in the last session, Mr. Chair, you considered some amendments that would make the business energy tax credit eligible for small hydro facilities. And that continues to be a provision that we would support as well, either on this legislation or other legislation that the committee works on. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and leave these handouts for you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Questions of Mr. Greeny from the Department of Energy? Hearing and seeing none, thank you. And we'll invite Matt Levins to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mike.
Chair Butler, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I'll keep my remarks short given the previous comments. Just want to again reiterate for the committee that we have significant concerns about what kind of reform of the pollution control tax credit is represented in this bill. And so while this is being talked about with the other biofuels package, we're having that conversation. It doesn't mean we necessarily support heading in that direction. So we'll, I guess, wait until we could come back here to have a more substantive discussion about that in that context.
Thank you, Matt. Other questions of Mr. Levin? Thank you very much. Any further discussion at this time on House Bill 2455, recognizing that we'll be seeing probably House Bill 3031 as part of a package of bills that are coming through from Representatives Krupp and Dingfelder. Hearing and seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2455. I'm going to open.
3455.
I'm sorry. 3455. And I'm going to open a work session for the purpose of bill introduction. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Mr. Chair, as you recall, a week or so ago, the committee had requested bill drafts. The Speaker approved that bill draft request, and the drafts are now before you in the form of two LCs, LC 3575 and LC 3576. LC 3575 is a constitutional amendment. And it is patterned after the language you see in House Bill 3460, which incorporates the Speaker's proposal on school finance. There are some differences here because, of course, this is a constitutional amendment. So there are some significant differences in the language and how the proposal would relate to the stabilization fund. So that's 3575. 3576 is a house memorial to the U.S. Congress, and it asks that the U.S. Congress permanently eliminate the federal estate tax.
Thank you, Paul. Colleagues, these are the two bill drafts which we've received for proposed introduction from the committee. You may or may not agree or disagree with the issues that are here. The question is placed before us in this session or not to move these forward for printing for presentation in the House. The motion is to move them forward for bill printing. Any discussion? Representative Hass.
I'm just curious where they originated.
I think they both have originated from the Speaker's office.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And again, we'll have an opportunity to see those again, I'm sure. So with that, hearing no objections to moving forward with the moving LC 3575 and LC 3576 to printing as on behalf of introduction of from the House Committee on Revenue, we will so order that action. Thank you very much, Paul. We will close the work session for bill introduction and open an informal meeting on House Bill 3460, an informational meeting. Pardon. Paul, we have 3460 in our possession at this time.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. That is a committee bill.
Colleagues, it's my intention to have some opportunities for various folks to work on the from both the House Revenue Committee members as well as other members from the education community and the Education Committee, the House Education Committee. I'm asking that both of the vice chairs from this committee attend that attend informational meetings with the other folks, as well as folks from the education community. I'll also ask the League of Oregon Cities to send someone over who might be able to help facilitate that that kind of a meeting. Just find out what all of the issues are. This is an informal work group, which is in the form of informational information gathering only. So I just wanted to announce that I will be working with the Speaker to work out the issues of getting some folks together to develop so that we can have a more full discussion and a public hearing on House Bill 3460 here on this committee. So that's for information and informational purposes only, but just be aware that both the vice chairs would be involved so that both caucuses could be involved. And at least one senator from the other side of the building is asked to be involved so that if they see the idea start to flesh out further, that they'll have some information. I would propose that we invite senators from both sides of the aisle at that point if they decide to attend. So with that, I'd just like to leave that open for your discussion, and then your caucuses will receive updates as you're moving forward with that. With that, Paul, anything else for the good of the order today? We'll close the informational hearing on 3460 and propose House Revenue. Thank you.